Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
You're listening to Griefcast with me, Carrie Ad Lloyd. Griefcast is a place to talk, share and laugh about the peculiar human process of death and grief. Each week I talk to a different person about their experiences of grief and death as we remember someone that they have lost along the way, whether it was a long time ago or you've just joined the club. Welcome to Griefcast. Hey Greasers, I hope you're having an okay week. It's hard, isn't it? This pandemic thing. It's a bit hard. I've had enough, don't know about you. It's so like grief, isn't it? You know, you just want a day off. You just want a day off from having to worry about it. Anyway, I hope that you are having an okay week wherever you are. Thank you so much for your lovely comments about last week's episode with Lee. If you haven't listened already, it's a really difficult but incredible listen. His story and courage and bravery are just incredible, and the book is out now as well. Thank you so much for writing and messaging me about that. I really appreciate it, and please do rate and you know, I say it every week, if you've done it, you've done it. Thank you. And I think if you haven't, it's all right. I mean, I appreciate it, but if you're just like, Carrie, I'm not going to do it, it's okay. You don't, I get it. People keep asking you to do things, right? It's a pandemic on, and every time someone asks you, you think, oh, gee, I can't add more to my list. So if you want to, it's appreciated. But if you don't, it's okay. I get it. Thank you for listening, basically. That's all. This week, I'm talking to stand-up comedian Garrett Millerick. Garrett is an incredible stand-up, extremely funny man. He tours all over the country. He's had two incredibly successful Edinburgh shows, Smile and Sunflower, hugely well-reviewed. And he's also appeared on Conan as well, famous American late-night TV show. Garrett came in to talk to me about his wife's pregnancy, which did end in a miscarriage, but they also found out later was an ectopic pregnancy. And a huge thank you to Garrett and his wife for coming to talk to us about that. Garrett, you're a comedian, obviously.
I am.
It's August. I just wanted to first of all talk about how are you feeling?
Oh, we're talking about the real grief.
The real grief.
Not having the Edinburgh Fringe to go to.
Yeah. Were you planning to go this year?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, mate.
I'm going to buck the trend or seem like a miser. I'm really happy to have the year off.
I think we all needed a year off. Like, no one was going to make everybody do that. So I do think it's good in some ways, obviously sad in others.
I had a conversation with my agent about 6 days into last year's Edinburgh Fringe, and we were having a coffee, and he said, so next year? And I said, well, I think I'm going to take a year off next year. And he didn't take a breath, and he just went, no, and then carried on talking. But it's nice because my wife's birthday is in the middle of August, and for our entire relationship, it's always been ruined by the Edinburgh Fringe. So for the first time ever, she's going to have a birthday that's not full of performers. And
I feel, because my birthday's end of August, and I had the same thing. Like, for the whole time, my husband was like, we've always been in Edinburgh. I've always had like a show to do, or I'm stressed because I want my show's now and then I'm going to gig on this. And I think the first time we had a London birthday again, it was like magic. I was like, oh my God, like I could just actually have a birthday, as opposed to going, yeah, 5 minutes, then I'm going to go meet so-and-so because I said I'd guest on their thing. And yeah, cake's great, but let's go. It's just horrible.
Yeah, I think, well, so when we were getting married, we were talking about, you know, what dates to do it. And a summer wedding came up, and I just said, look, for the foreseeable future, it'll be ruined by Edinburgh. Yeah. So, like, do you want like the planning of the wedding or the honeymoon or all of that? Do you want that to be in any way buggered up by preparation of shows, doing shows? Yeah. And she was like, no, we're getting married in May. I said, yeah, that's a good idea.
That is exactly what we did.
Yeah.
Got married in May. Isn't that awful? I said to him, I was like, May is just far enough that I will be able to give you concentration and I won't be a dick. But then obviously June, July, I need to do previews.
Yeah.
It's awful, isn't it? God, we're so, I know, it's really, I think people don't, if you're not in that, you know, obviously in that circuit, you don't realise how vital
it's impossible.
Edinburgh
it's impossible
is.
To yeah. explain it.
Yeah, it is, because it doesn't make sense, because you're like, oh, for 1 month, you all work in the same place, and that gets you work for like the rest of the year, and you're like, yes.
Yeah,
basically,
yeah.
It's like month trade
show. I flyered these two girls in the Pleasant Courtyard, and they looked so depressed, and it was like the last weekend, and I was like, oh, okay, you know, and what's wrong? And they said, well, we came up here to see our friend who's doing a show, and we came up to surprise her, and like we just showed up this morning, and she wasn't excited to see us, and so me and my friend sort of ended up sort of gently explaining that they'd rocked up. They're like, because we thought it would be fun, because it's a huge party. Like, I mean, you guys go and have fun party, but don't, you know,
yeah, your friend is not at the party. Your friend is the person funding the party.
Yeah.
So your friend is not okay, but you go, you enjoy
it. Yeah. You have a great time, but yeah, this perhaps was not a well-conceived plan. Yeah.
Oh, bless them. Well, yeah. Anyway, sadly, we're not here to talk about the grief of Edinburgh. Obviously, it's the pain is real. Garrett, who are we remembering today?
Well, we are, I believe we're talking about...
Yeah, it's a difficult question in this circumstances, I guess, right?
It is a difficult question. Yeah, so we were talking about a miscarriage. So it's really remembering an incident, really, as opposed to an incident in a second set of circumstances, as opposed to an individual.
Yeah. And we've talked, because that's, we always start the show with, like, who is it we're talking about? And we have covered miscarriage before, and it is a really, it's really... tough, isn't it? Because like you said, it depends on your religious views, your philosophical views of like how you determine what had happened. So let's go back a bit, I guess. So how long ago did this miscarriage happen?
This was 2 years ago.
2 years ago. So still recent, really.
Yeah.
And so were you guys trying? Was it like unexpected?
Yes. So we were trying, we did a standard thing, you know, after got married, moved to the suburbs and and then got on that the trying rotor. So it was an odd set of circumstances, because we were trying, we got pregnant quite quickly, and then we had a miscarriage, and then that was, you know, sort of difficult to get over, but we got over that, and just as we were getting back to work, Sarah had just gone back to work, I'd started gigging again, and we'd given ourselves a couple of weeks, we'd gone away for a bit, and then one night I got a call from Sarah, and it wasn't Sarah, it was a friend of Sarah's, telling me that she'd collapsed. And I went to where she was, and she couldn't speak and she couldn't stand up, and she was in a huge amount of pain. So I called an ambulance, and they couldn't come for a very long time. So I put her in the back of the car, drove as fast as I could to the hospital. Got to the hospital, there was a horrific situation at the hospital. Nobody could deal with this, nobody knew what was going on, and it took... some of the reason about 6 hours, 7 hours.
Oh, God.
Until about 2-3 o'clock in the morning, they finally worked out that what was wrong with her was we hadn't had a miscarriage. Mm. We'd had an ectopic pregnancy, which had been missed.
And then
it got quite far along and ruptured. So that was a very hairy situation. So I thought possibly we're going to lose her in that whole... storm there. And so then we kind of, so then we got over that, but it was a double whammy, really. So it wasn't, because we thought we'd had the miscarriage and then we dealt with that and went through that, and then the situation happened with this ectopic. So it was quite the the bat swing.
Really. Yeah. So how many weeks was she when you thought she had the miscarriage?
9 or 10.
Nine or ten. Okay. Yeah. The difficult thing I think with miscarriage is what sometimes gets thrown at people or women, I think, very quickly is like, oh, it's so common. It's so common. You know, it happens. And I think sometimes, which I think is a really, our generation, it's really good that we know that, because definitely two generations ago, they didn't know it was common. It was sort of, you know, kept to yourself. But equally, I think it slightly minimizes the situation of like, oh, it's like falling over. You know, these things happen. And it's like, it can still be very, obviously, like, very difficult to deal with, very painful.
Well, I don't know, in terms of sort of our generation, if like I'd say that women know that.
Right.
Say that men don't. You know, that they call it the 12-week secret and stuff. Like we don't know about that, and we don't talk about it. Like the level of my ignorance surrounding pregnancy, the risks of pregnancy, what can happen, everything, was, I must say, absolutely staggering. I didn't conceive of it as being something that was particularly dangerous.
Wow, yeah.
Which sounds like a stupid thing to say. Well, it is a stupid thing to say.
No, it's not. It's because why would you? If it's not talked, you know, in front of you, why would you know? And you're right, like, women talk. So, you know, we hear mums talking, aunties talking, mums' friends talking to another friend about so-and-so who something happened. Like, we hear that. And I think, like you said, a lot of men are not party to those conversations.
Well, I think, I don't know what the situation is now, but certainly sort of growing up in the 90s, your kind of level of education in terms of talking about pregnancy as men is, well, don't get a girl pregnant, don't do that. And you go, God, yes, don't do that. And you don't want to do that. And then you get into a thing of trying for a baby and you go, oh, right, it's relatively complicated.
I know, there's slightly, I think that's the thing, they don't, because there was, especially when I think, when we were growing up, there's such a thing about teenage pregnancy. It was like
massive,
the worst thing that could happen. I remember school, like, teachers talking about it, watching things on Grain Chill, like, oh, which actually is so unfair. It is not the worst thing that can happen to a teenager. But yeah, I agree with you. There's this whole like narrative of like, don't do it. And especially when you're younger, it's like, oh my God, like, you'll get pregnant. We all, like, the girls will know, like, what pharmacy will give you the morning after pill without any questions. Yeah. And then you said when you get to this age and you try, you're like, oh, I probably could have had, although unprotected sex when you're younger, you are more fertile. That is the other side of it. But yeah, I know what you mean. You're suddenly like, oh, it's not like I'm just going to have sex and then boom, there's going to be a baby. Because that's what made me think.
Yeah, there are apps.
Yeah. Yeah.
There are apps and timetables and tests.
Yeah. And my God, the ovulation diaries and when you can do it. And it suddenly becomes much more scientific.
I was having a conversation with a one of those things about what stage you're at in life. I was talking to another comedian and they asked me a question. I said, yeah, well, we're trying for a baby. And they said, oh, yeah, well, thanks. We all needed to know you're having regular sex with your wife. Thanks for that. And I just burst out laughing. And they were like, what? And I was like, no. The conception of what you think you're talking about and what I'm talking about are radically different. Anyway, I'll see you in about 8 to 10 years. But.
Yeah, it's hard to. Yeah, I think that's the thing, especially when you're in your 20s. Especially if you're a young 20-year-old comedian, you're like, no, it's not as fun as it sounds, guys. Like, so it's a schedule and a diary and apps and a science and tricky. I think that's really interesting what you said there, because I think, well, obviously I can only speak in my own experience, but most women I know, that 12-week thing is a big thing. If they're like, if someone says, oh, do you know so-and-so's pregnant? How many weeks? 10. Okay, all right, I won't say anything. Like, you have this weird automatic, which I know some people do really disagree with, because then miscarriages aren't talked about. But were you, when Sarah did have the miscarriage, were you very shocked by that it could even happen?
I had no idea that it was as common as it was. And yeah, I think the 12-week thing is, I've got mixed feelings about it. I think it's slightly unhelpful, because one, it leads to these things not being talked about, and then I think it puts a kind of shame element on it, which is incredibly unhelpful. And also, when it happens, you need people around you who are sympathetic to the situation.
Yeah.
And if it's been a huge secret, I don't see how that's helpful. And I certainly, I would say that the prevalence of that attitude is what sort of led me to being surprised about it, and certainly contributed to my ignorance of the situation, certainly the first trimester of pregnancy. So I do think I was able to talk to somebody about it because, principally because they had been very open. A comedian called Steve McNeil, you know Steve.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so Steve and his wife have had a number of miscarriages, and so that's led to Steve doing a lot of work for the Miscarriage Association. Mm. And he'd done a lot of fundraising things and had been sort of publicly quite open about their journey. And so that meant, because he'd spoken about that when it happened, I knew that he was somebody I could speak to. But I only had that option because he had been so open and generous about about talking about it with people. And I think that was, you know, that was really, really great for me. And it was certainly kind of a good example of that kind of thing.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's interesting, though, because it takes, like you said, it takes one person, especially in this situation, one man, to be like, oh, this is the other side of it. This can happen. For you to be like, oh, there is a space I can talk to. Whereas, yeah, if Steve hadn't, did you find other friends were like, oh, right, like sort of didn't know how to say it, deal with it with you, especially, I guess, male friends?
Yeah, I guess so. Well, it's one of the, I suppose it's like all these things, like nobody knows what to say. Like, there isn't really anything.
No, there's no magic word, yeah.
The thing I did find really, like it was utterly ridiculous. When it happens, the amount of babies you see everywhere in like the 5 days afterwards, it's just absolutely insane. And even in like we were trying to find just something to watch on TV to take our minds off it, and we put on a Jennifer Aniston Owen Wilson comedy called Marley and Me, and we thought that'd be fine. It has a miscarriage 20 minutes into the film, and you're like, oh for God's sake.
It's so weird, it, isn't it?
Like, it becomes this weird sort of thing with just bear traps everywhere. We went up to, I like the week before it happened, I'd done a gig in Lytham, and it's a really nice place. And I thought, oh, Sarah would like it here. And so when it happened, I said, look, we'll just go up there. We'll get a hotel up there for a couple of days. Just go walk on the beach, you know, just get out and chill out. And so we were there. And I think 2 days after it happened, we were in a Pizza Express in the middle of this sleepy town. There was nobody around. We were the only people in this restaurant. And then suddenly the doors opened and about 15 prams came in. And this like mother's meeting just sat like around us. And Sarah was sitting there going, I need you to say something, anything. And I was like,
It's so weird, isn't it? And you feel like the universe is conspiring.
It does feel like that.
Yeah, but obviously it's just because you never would have noticed that. It never would have caught your attention before. But same thing when you are pregnant. I feel like that when... Yeah, when I was first pregnant, I was like, I just suddenly felt like every woman was pregnant and looking at me. And you're just like, where have all these pregnant women been? Like, and I say, like, you know, after my dad died, you suddenly, like, it feels like everyone's talking about their dads or it's Father's Day. Like, it's just you're heightened, obviously, to being to that nerve is more sensitive. But my God, poor you, that must have been just like, I can't believe it's in Marley and Me. You know, that's a good, they should have a trigger warning on the Netflix summary of like, contains.
They don't have that on that back where they say like contain scenes of mild peril and stuff. Yeah. Maybe there's this has a lot of babies or discussion of it was very weird. But the situation in the restaurant, it became we just started laughing hysterically because it was so ridiculous.
It's so ridiculous, isn't it? It's when your life is too sitcom. Like you're like, well that would happen in a sitcom, and in a sitcom you think that would never happen. And when you're living it, you're like, it's too much. Like I'm expecting Martin Clunes to come over as the waiter now and do like a funny turnabout. I think it's great that you can laugh about it. Like I think that's the only
Well that was what we did all the way through the whole thing was we were just joking and laughing about it. And that was about the situation, about things like that, and it just and particularly like when we were in the hospital and we didn't know what the ectopic thing was, we were just sharing jokes. It was just that was the route through it, the route out of it.
Yeah, the language of survival, I think, especially if you are a comedian, it is always jokes. Like, you know, if your brain already goes to what's funny in a difficult time, it's the same. Because I've had people say to me before, like, oh, well, how were you cracking jokes when he was dying? You're like, because I would have cracked a joke if we'd been at the supermarket, like anywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
It makes it sound like I'm like, laugh a minute. I'm actually not. I'm actually quite serious. But like...
That's the thing people don't know about us comedians.
Yeah, I know. Actually, very serious. Until it's very traumatic and you want to break the tension. Mm. I think, it can be... I think it's I personally think it's quite healthy. I know, like, there's lots of, like, therapy thing opinions of, like, well, what are you hiding from? But I actually think to have a break from the horribleness, to just remember that you can laugh and your body takes in, like, more air and be like, oh, yeah, they, I will get through this. This is going to be okay.
I think it's obviously we would say this, but I just think it's the best thing. I mean, after it happened, it was this time of year. Well, as we started off talking about it, we were headed to the Edinburgh Festival.
Oh,
the whole
God, yeah,
the whole thing was booked in, and then that was there. So I didn't know, like, I didn't know what to do about that. I just thought, well, I'll put a pin in it. And my producer, Georgie Donnelly, who I'd worked with for a number of years, she was absolutely fantastic. She was like, if you want to cancel it, like, whatever you want to do, like, just no pressure. And so Sarah and I were talking about it, and I had like 45 minutes of stuff worked out. And I was like, right, okay, what I'm going to do, I'm going to go up and I'll do the 45 minutes of what I had planned to do. And then I will basically just tell the audience why I couldn't finish the show. So what happened, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
And then for what it was worth, the back end of the show would be about how laughter got us through that situation.
Mm.
So it ended up kind of being like this unfinished show with this bit on the end about humour. So I was like, right, okay, that's a plan. And then Sarah was really into that, and it gave us kind of a nice thing to focus on afterwards. Yeah. So we both kind of worked on it together. And then it just became a really interesting situation, because if it hadn't been so close, I wouldn't have done it. Like, I wouldn't have done anything about it. But it was basically the only option, either cancel it or do something like that. And I'm so glad, I'm really glad it did, because I ended up meeting and speaking to a lot of people who'd had a similar situation.
Mm.
And even then, Deborah Frances White is a good friend of mine, found out what I was doing and said, oh, you've got to come on The Guilty Feminist and talk about the show. And because of that plug, that then sort of opened it up to a big audience of people who had experienced something similar.
Mm.
And then they would come down to the show and, like, afterwards they would want to talk to me about
it. So, yeah.
Which was great. Like, Sarah's best mate is a clinical psychologist, and she had given me a couple of exercises to do if it was kind of difficult after the show. And it was really great that she did, but I ended up not needing them at all, because I had this sort of huge number of people coming and sharing their experiences, and it was really cathartic and great just to be able to talk about it afterwards.
Yeah, I think that's incredible that you did that. I think that's really... It's a bit like we're saying about Steve. It's like, it can seem from the outside sometimes, I think, especially with comedy shows, you're like, oh, they're just doing this thing about that. All right. Oh, yeah, they used to be like a ski jumper. So the show's about ski jumping. Okay. You know, like, it's very... But actually, when it is something so painful and vulnerable, it's really hard to talk about. And you do really open yourself up to other people then sharing their story, which is what I have with this podcast. Like, I did not intend to, like, open that door at all. I didn't really think it through, to be honest. That was what happened. And then I do get so many stories. And I agree with you that obviously sometimes it can be hard, and some days you're like, okay, my head isn't quite ready to deal with that. But it's what it constantly reminds you of, like, oh, like, as we say on the show all the time, like, I'm not alone. Like, I'm not the only person this happened to. Whereas when it's happening to you, you can feel like, oh my, especially if you're not aware of that this can happen, you feel like, we're the only people this is happening to. This is so awful. Like, how do people get through this? And that conversation, when other people come up to you and be like, oh, this happened to us X years ago, or we did this, you're like, oh, I see. Like, actually, this is normal.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's really, it's interesting, and it sort of ties back to that 12 weeks thing of, like, I wonder if it is because the idea of a birth is so precious to so many people. Like, I think people find miscarriage just so difficult to talk about, because it's so, the idea of, like, a life not even yet formed suddenly not being here. It's so hard for people to wrap their heads around as well.
Mm.
But actually, it's like you said, because it is common, we should be talking about it. And that 12-week thing is really, I didn't tell people till after 12 weeks, but I'm very anxious. So I was kind of okay with that, because I was like, if something happens, I want to be able to like be able to deliver that information first. Do you know what I mean? To be able to say, yeah. Oh, okay, it happened at 10 weeks, but now I'm telling you, I'm in charge of it, rather than someone being like, oh, hey, what's happening? And me being like, oh, I wasn't ready to tell you. So I think I didn't mind it, but I completely understand that it does, yeah, lock people off in a certain way.
Yeah. I do think there are things, I know I was talking against it earlier, there are things about it that are very sensible, but I do think that it, like every book saying it and everything, that's like, don't, it then kind of, if you don't make the finish line or, the, you know, that first kind of thing, there's a huge amount, I think particularly the first time it happens, for you, there's a huge amount of shame involved,
which I think
is really, as you say, like it is common. It's tragically common, and it's not something that people should feel any shame about.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, it happens. It's not anyone's fault. But yeah, that I just think that kind of that marker in the sand for the end of the first trimester, like it's there for a reason. But there are drawbacks to it.
Yeah, there's consequences to it, because I think I can see that it's there for a reason, and you know, statistically, that once they get past 12 weeks, the chances of survival increase. But I agree with you, anything that isn't talked about or is hidden becomes shameful, because why aren't we talking about it? You know,
yeah.
Like immediately, it's like, well, what's wrong
also,
with it?
There's a huge, after you get past 6 weeks, the drop off, the chance of it happening. Drastically reduced. It's kind of constant all the way through the first trimester. It drops and drops and drops and drops. So it's not quite as, and you know, of course, it can happen after 12 weeks as well. So it's not like it's a sliding scale where, and there's all sorts of things in the whole 9 months that can go wrong, and it's immensely complicated and dangerous.
Like you said, I think that's really interesting that you didn't know it was dangerous. Like, I think that's
no idea.
Yeah,
absolutely no idea. It's very silly to say, but I had no idea. And I was talking to a friend of mine, another comedian, and she spoke to me about it at a gig, I guess about 2-3 months after it happened, and she told me that she had had an experience with her first pregnancy, and subsequently things were fine. And she was kind of saying to me, like, don't worry, it's not going to affect trying again and that sort of thing. But she did say the one thing that you will never have again is this idea that it's a breeze and it's not a high risk thing. And I think that is absolutely true.
Yeah, it puts that anxiety into your head, which I think any experience with grief or death does. I mean, like, we talk about on the show a lot, like, because my dad died of cancer, like, the moment my mum has a cough, I'm like, what's happening, you're right? Like, you know, you then become aware of the fragility of all of us. And I think especially with pregnancy, if you have an easy pregnancy, inverted commas easy, no, that's never easy, but if you don't have any medical problems, there is a kind of, yeah, you don't have that anxiety, I guess, that you now have of anything happen, because it's happened to you. So of course every ache or pain is like, well, what's happening, are you okay, like, everything okay? That's how humans learn, is through experience. Did you find, because so then she had the ectopic pregnancy, well then you found out it was ectopic much later. Was that again something that, did you even know that could happen? Was that something you were like,
no,
I don't think it's silly. I really don't think it's silly. I think it's, you're probably not allowed.
I mean, I'd heard of it, so I wasn't, I had heard of it, but it wasn't something I was particularly like familiar with. Yeah, this time round, I've read a lot more of the books.
So you say this time round, so.
Oh yes, so yeah. Well, we can talk about it. We are past 12 weeks, so it's fine to discuss it.
Oh, congratulations! I'm very,
very,
very happy to hear that.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to Griefcast with Carrie Adloyd. Was that first 12 weeks tricky for you? Did you find yourself
It was an absolute... I mean, the first 6 weeks, I think, were an absolute nightmare. Mm. To the point that, as we're saying, because you have a hyper-awareness to the thing, and and you also just start reliving it in that you go, okay, I was totally over that. And they go, oh, no, there's definitely left a mark.
Yeah, of course. And that's what I mean about minimising. Like, I think knowing that it's common is very helpful to make you think, oh, okay, I'm normal. You know, my body will... People have miscarriages and they get pregnant again. Like, okay. But yeah, it does also make this idea of like, oh, well, then you'll be fine, right? Like, why are you still talking about it? Like you said, like, as if it leaves no mark on your body. And I think it's really interesting because I think women... It's generalizing, obviously, but I do think women are a bit... There's an idea that, oh, if a woman has had a miscarriage, of course she's going to be... It's going to be a bit tricky next time around. She may feel sensitive, she may feel anxious, and as her friend, you're aware of that. But I think it's interesting, talking from a man's perspective, that, yeah, it affected you. Of course, now she's pregnant again, it's still... Like you said, it's left a mark. I think that's really... That isn't discussed a lot of the time.
No, I mean, it definitely, for the first... We had an early scan at 7 or 8 weeks just to check it was all in the right place and everything going, and everything calmed down a bit after that. But certainly for the first chunk of it, I was very stressed and like just hyper about everything, whilst at the same time making sure that I was keeping that away from Sarah. So it was kind of during a lockdown situation as well. So,
of course. Oh my God. So you found out during lockdown?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, that's really, really... How did you handle that?
Well, it was incredibly exciting. And then, yeah, the terrifying thing there was just from last time, I just had to make sure, like, I'd go and walk the dog and have my little flip out, I'd talk to a friend or something in the park and then come home and be chill. Because it's very unhelpful and incredibly outside the bounds of my role in this to be like, and chucking stress on the situation. So yeah, it's been an interesting one. Isn't it?
I think it's really, it's so hard. I feel for the man in this situation because your emotions are valid. What you're feeling is valid. But like you said, you can't go to the person you'd normally go to, your partner, and be like, oh, I'm a bit stressed about this, like this happened, because she is going through a huge, huge thing. And I know, especially when, when I've been pregnant, it's been like, my empathy levels are very low, like, very low on anybody else, because you're so busy making a baby. And it's, like you said, it's not until you are pregnant that you realise, like, oh, that's quite massive on my body. As a child or a younger person, you're like, oh, then a baby just grows and you carry on as normal. It's like, no, it feeds off you and destroys you. Like, that's quite an ordeal. So yeah, I guess, did you find like you could talk to friends about it, about them? And did they understand how that miscarriage had affected you? Or did you kind of find yourself having to find other metaphors for it?
I think, yeah, a couple of people did. It wasn't something that was sort of openly discussed. It was, I think, that it was just one of those things that they were aware of So it wasn't, you know, I wasn't going out and talking to huge numbers of people, but there were just a couple of people that I was talking to, like, regularly about it, who knew the situation, and that was very useful.
Yeah.
But it was very useful to have people to talk to. So I broke the 12-week.
But I think if something has happened like that, you kind of have to the next time round. I think I can first pregnancy and everything's fine and you just don't want to tell people just yet, that's fine. But if something has happened, I totally understand being like, no, this time I want to talk about it and I don't want to be ashamed that I'm worried or that something might go wrong because something did. Like, of course you're going to have that anxiety.
One of the things, just going back to something you said earlier there, that I found really interesting about last time, and this was on Sarah, not on me, but there were several times where I wanted to break chairs over people's heads, but afterwards when people were like going, are you trying again, and you're like, could you give her a minute? any chance you could back the fuck off for 2 seconds? And people asking the question would be like, yeah, so, you know, really, really, obviously she really wants a baby. It's something she really, really wants. But the last time nearly killed her. So she's now scared of it. So if you wouldn't mind shutting the fuck up and minding your own business for 5 minutes, that would be really useful.
Did you find that common question that people were like, oh, you know, yeah.
Yeah, it's terrible.
I think it's about the sadness of because the loss of a fetus, a baby. It makes people so sad that what they want to know is, if you're trying again, then I can feel better about your sadness. Like, then I'm like, oh, good, they will have another one. Of course they will. Whereas if, you know, Sarah would be like, no, we're not. It's broken us and I don't want to. You'd be like, oh, no, that's too sad. I don't want to know that. So that question of, like, are you trying again is then being like, please tell me you're going to be okay, because I want to walk away from this chat thinking you're okay. And it's so insensitive. It's so insensitive.
Yeah, it's very weird. It's that... it's so thoughtless that I just think generally around things when people, because you don't know what people's stories are or what's going on with them, and the chat around babies anyway for people in couples, or, you know, particularly women, just constantly like, so are you thinking about having a baby? Are you not having a baby? Are you doing work things? And it's just like, well, it's very much none of your business.
I know, and let me warn you, when you do have a baby, the first question people ask you, literally when they're about 3 months old, are you going to have another? You're like, I just made one. And I, again, like, I'm exhausted, I'm ill, I'm sick. Why, like a factory, like, come on then, where's the... I find people's interest in other people's wombs very odd. And the only person I've ever, like, I have a very, very close friend who'll be like, when we were younger, would be like, when are you going to do it? When are you going to have a baby? And even my very, very close friend, I'd be like, dude, why are you asking me? And she'd be like, well, I just want to know. And I'd be like, yeah, but you, what if I don't want to talk about it? She's like, well, you just tell me. And I was like, yeah, I guess. But even that, even though someone I tell everything to, you know, have been friends for years and years, I found like, oh, she's asking me about my womb. Okay, how do I feel about that? And I think what you said is so true. You do not know what's going on. Because people could have, you know, because miscarriage is common. I think it's also, I find, it's women that say it. Maybe that's a generalisation. It's women talking to other women about it.
I think that's probably just your experience of it. I'd imagine, that I think there are, I don't think being massively insensitive is a gendered issue.
No, but I think it's something about women talking to other women about their wombs, being like, well, I've got one, so I can ask you what's going on with yours.
Yes.
Like, as if we're talking about bras or dresses, and it's like you said, you just don't know what's happening, and especially an ectopic
pregnancy. It's such a danger area as
well.
You're like, well, you know, 10% of the time this conversation could be great, but if it's not, it will be so bad. So, just leave it alone.
That's so true. It's not like, yeah, it's not like, oh, it'll be a bit awkward. It's like the answer could be really awful, so just don't walk into it. What, like you said, it is none of your business what someone else is planning with children. And even if someone, again, that's talked about a lot more now, but if someone is choosing not to have them, that's like, maybe, why do they have to justify it to you? You know, like, oh, well, I could, but I'm not. Why don't you want to use your womb? Like, what's happening?
Oh, you will.
You will. You'll change your mind. The only people allowed to get away with that are like 90-year-old grannies. Even then, I feel like it's annoying, but I'm like, look, if you're
you're an old lady, say what you like, it's fine, you've lived, you survived many yeah. other things. Especially with an ectopic pregnancy, I guess, yeah, if people don't know, it's extremely dangerous, ectopic pregnancy, as you know, and it's where the fetus forms in the fallopian tube, that's right, isn't it?
Yep.
So it's basically can't grow there. That must have been very... was it very traumatic having to go through something like that after already being like, oh, this was sad, but we're going to get through this. Okay, here we go.
Yeah, I mean, and particularly because we didn't know what it was for a long time, because that, you know, the first issue had been dealt with. So we were in like a bowel ward in the hospital.
Oh my God.
I mean, yeah, it was like 2 a.m. before somebody did an examination of her cervix. And she had like a huge distended belly.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's one of the most painful things that can ever happen to you. So, I mean, when it happened to her, she couldn't speak and sit down or stand up. And she was white as a sheet of paper. And the situation that we had in the hospital was horrific. It was really bad. And the strange thing about that was it was really bad. And no one said sorry, because everybody was... everybody treated me like I was going to sue them. And I have absolutely no intention whatsoever of suing a hospital.
Mm.
But the people treating me like I was going to sue them didn't half make me want to sue them. Because it was just like, look, just say sorry. Or just, it was really... And then a friend of mine's a nurse, and she was telling me that... that it's the most litigious area, that the hospitals get sued over it all the time to do with babies. Because obviously emotions are running high.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I get that. But also, I'd say 60% of that could be dealt with if people weren't treated like they were.
Yeah, about to sue them.
You know, this is a huge fuck up. You can't sue us because here are the ways that it was your fault, and here are the ways that it was her fault. And you're like, do you want to... I mean, she's just out of surgery. Like, I went, and she was out of surgery. I went home for a bit to get some sleep. And then the surgeon only came down to speak to her about what happened when I wasn't there.
Mm.
And basically blamed her for it while she was out of surgery and off her face on morphine. And I thought, well, that's nice. That was really...
So when they were talking to you, was it very much, like you said, a defensive position? Is that how you felt?
Yeah.
Well, this is very common. This happens and we didn't know and we checked, like...
Yeah. Well, it was... There were a few things, like, they would have found it in the bloods, but basically what the blood test didn't happen, and that was partly our fault, but also we didn't know. We were in a hospital that we did, like, the third time we'd been in the hospital, and... her blood had been taken the last two times up in the maternity ward.
Right.
And they just handed us a ticket and said, you've got to go downstairs to get this blood test done. And we went downstairs and walked into a room where there must have been 300 people queuing.
Yeah.
And she just couldn't handle it. And I was like, yeah, fine. So we didn't. But nobody told us it was important because it was the third blood test. We had no idea. And we thought, well, if it was important, they would have done it upstairs. Yeah. And they were like, oh, no, it's just standard on Monday to Friday. We send people down into the blood thing and we don't do it in the maternity. So we were saying to them, well, like, maybe if somebody is, like, incredibly upset, just take it in the maternity or explain why it is vitally important that you queue for that length of time.
It's so hard as well when it comes to... miscarriage as well, because you are in a maternity unit, you know, like you're in the place, you're surrounded, like you said, it's not like Pizza Express and they're walking in. And I've had a friend who had a stillbirth and was put on to the maternity unit ward surrounded by women that just had their babies, and obviously the NHS is so underfunded and so overstretched, but yeah, like this, like you said, the sensitivity around these situations is paramount, because you're so vulnerable at that point. And especially for you, I guess you feel like, you know, you're not the one in the agonizing pain, you just want to protect her.
Yeah, well, that was a difficult thing this time round, because we went back to the hospital for this pregnancy, and I'd not thought about this, it's the same hospital.
Yeah.
So we're getting up there for her first appointment, and then she started getting really jittery because it's the place where this terrible thing happened. So I was like, it's absolutely fine. It's no problem. You know, I'll be with you. And then we got up to the door and they were like, COVID rules, no partners.
Oh, God. God.
So they had to go and sit in the car and be like, I hope she's all right. So it's not an idea.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I've got a friend, another friend who's currently pregnant and told me that COVID means they can't come, that, you know, it's just her for scans and stuff like that. And again, yeah, we had another mutual friend who was pregnant, had the 12-week, and they said, I'm really sorry, like, you know, you've had a miscarriage and it was missed, and she was by herself. And it's that thing about COVID that obviously you understand, but there's a charity called Birthrights, which is a really amazing charity, and they've been doing lots of campaigning to argue that birth and maternity and that side of health is actually very different to going into like a kidney scan or, you know, speaking to a doctor. Like, you know, you are as invested in that pregnancy as your wife is, like, just because she's the one carrying it. And I think it's slightly like that blanket rule that COVID has applied to everything, which of course I understand, of course, but yeah that must have been really hard that she suddenly had to go to the place where, and of course you haven't been back there, why would you go back there, like, it's the maternity unit, like, so
but we didn't even think, we haven't moved house or anything, so of course
I know.
But yeah, it was one of those things where you just go, oh God, yeah, I should have thought of that.
But why would you? Like you said, until you kind of, like you said, the whole ignorance around birth and pregnancy, which I think men and women have, until you open that door and start going down that road, why do you need to know all this stuff? Because there's so much stuff to know. Like you said, all the books, like, there's an unbelievable amount of information about pregnancy and what's happening and what's going to happen to you that I think until you have to deal with it, a bit like grief, you know, like we talk a lot on the show of like people should know and we should talk about it. But until you are dealing with it, it's very hard to conceptualize what that means, what it means to be a man whose wife, partner has had a miscarriage. Like, it would have been hard to explain that to you 10 years ago. You know what I mean?
Yes, I probably wouldn't have listened either.
Well, yeah, because until you're in those shoes. And did you feel like, I'm just wondering, like, did you feel like you grieved for it in a way? Or did you feel like it sort of, you felt like you couldn't? I'm just wondering because of how you felt. Some people with miscarriages feel like, no, it was a real thing. It was to me. And other people feel like, you said, it was just an incident. That's not how I feel.
I think I grieved for the situation. I'd certainly kind of, for me, like, I had not put a huge amount of thought into the trying for a baby. I was just like, yes, that is what we will do. So I hadn't kind of like visualized it or it wasn't something that I actively wanted when I was younger. So it's not, whereas, you know, for Sarah, I think it was very different. But then when we got pregnant, I suddenly realized that I really wanted it. And it was, I was like, oh yeah, okay. And then that'll put together. And then you start kind of visualizing the situation and thinking about things and going through and being like, yeah. And you kind of reorder yourself in your mind a little bit to what you're going to do and what life's going to be like. And then it doesn't happen and you go, oh, so you've kind of done all this sort of planning and visualizing and stuff and you have to kind of pack that away and put it on another shelf and be like, okay, we'll get that later. So yeah, I think I don't know if I grieved for the individual, but I certainly grieved for the situation.
Yeah, I think that's really well put, that the brain can't help but go forward and be like, oh, I see, boom, 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 this can happen, this can happen, this can happen, this happen. And when it doesn't work out how you want it to, it's like you said, it's undoing all those sort of future memories, isn't it? Of like, oh, okay, that's not. And that is a grief. It's a complicated grief, I think.
Yeah. Doing the show like immediately afterwards and speaking to lots of people about that, it was really unexpected and really cathartic. So that kind of, that dealt with a lot of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Through the situation and kind of for both of us as well, because it was kind of nice to know that this terrible thing happened, and then through that you were able to meet a lot of other people. And then also we had this sort of really strange situation in that the show was very successful, and it completely changed my life, really, in terms of how successful it was. And that was something that I'd wanted for a very long time. But it was interesting to have it after this huge sort of perspective.
Yeah.
And not that it wasn't like, it wasn't meaningful or anything, but it very much wasn't the be all and end all. It was, this nice thing had happened, but it was, you know, that's certainly something that I probably when I was younger would have been like, yeah, that's something I really want, is, you know, for my career to go well and things like that. And when that did happen, it wasn't like a hooray, you know. It happened in a with a sense of perspective about it, which was great. I mean, it's sort of somebody said something. I've had two incredibly crass comments about the situation. Actually, no, a few more than that, but two really stick in my mind. One was when somebody said in Edinburgh, said, "You were very lucky to have that miscarriage happen."
No, they didn't.
They absolutely did.
Oh my god! And it was a comedian, of course, right?
Yeah, of course.
Oh god, because I love comedians, but also they can be the worst people in the world.
Yeah, dreadful people.
Oh my god, Garrett, that's awful! What a thing to say! Yeah. Jesus Christ!
And somebody said to me on when the award nominations came out, they were like, "Ah, it's like the biggest loss that you didn't get a nom for that." And I was like,
oh, fucking hell.
I was like, no, it's all right. And they were like, they're like, oh, I don't know why it, you know, you must be just devastated. And I was like, no. And then when I was like, I sort of missed out on some things this year that I wanted a bit more than that. But
it's so hard to explain to, like, if you don't know comedians, that Edinburgh, as we talked about, is everything. And for some of them, I tell you, for not the healthy ones, but for some of them, like, reviews and prizes and all of that is like life or death. It is life or death.
It is life or death, and it is all there is. And particularly, like, younger ones,
yes,
where they're like the conception of, like, you having a life outside of this thing that is more meaningful to you than the thing. It's just anathema.
So yeah. Because like, I can almost forgive saying like, oh, it's big loss. Because I can imagine a very young, naive person just not knowing what it means to lose a baby in that way. Just like not really understanding, being like, oh, right. But to say you were lucky is the kind of bullshit that's really like, the only thing I would counter it with is like, I feel sorry for that person, because that person has a lot of things to deal with. They have a lot of things to deal with, because if you can look at someone's pain and be jealous, like, what is happening in your heart? Because, you know, I know exactly what you're talking about. Like, Griefcast, you know, I had my first baby. I couldn't get a lot of work. People literally said to my face, "You're pregnant. We don't want you to do this job, this sitcom, this gig." And I started a podcast and it went very well. And I was very surprised. I had not done it with that, like, you know, cynical hat on. Mm. And then when it does well, of course you're like, oh, that's great. The only reason I can talk about this is my dad died when I was 15. Like, that's not like, I don't like you said, I don't like woohoo around the place. Like, the thing that makes me happy is when people come to me and say, oh, this helped. Then I'm like, oh, that's a woohoo. That's a, like, great, good. This used to be useful in this world is, like, I think the only sort of thing you can, like, get joy out of. And I think it's what I think is hard if you're not in comedy to understand, like, how bitter and jealous people can get about things, and to view your pain, like, to say, oh, you had something to talk about in a show. I'm like, oh, you need some therapy. Like, that's...
Yeah. There was another one which wasn't a comedian, it was a producer. When I was doing a show for the next year, they asked me what it was about, and I was like, "It's not about anything. It's an hour of jokes and stories." And they were like, "No, that would be career suicide, because what people reacted to last year was the tragedy. So what you need is another tragedy, and ideally it has to be worse." And
Are you fucking kidding me?
No, it's outside the Soho Theatre, puffing on a cigarette, going, "Yeah, it needs to be worse." And
oh my god!
Then I sort of, you know, bat it off as the ridiculous comment it was, and I said, "But nothing bad's happened." And then I was greeted with, "Oh, it doesn't need to be true." And I just thought,
like, gross, like, get me away from this person. Jesus Christ.
But that was an absolute gift, because then I took that conversation lock, stock and barrel and I put it in the next show and just said, "Look, I'm not gonna do this."
And I think also what's stupid from that perspective of, you know, people believing that you need tragedy to make to be successful. Like, that's what gets it. Something bad happens to someone. Oh, they were in a plane crash, they wrote a book about it, boom. Like, and it's like, no, it's not the thing that happened to them, it's the way that they dealt with it, it's the communication, it's the openness, it's the vulnerability, it's the truth. Like, that's what people connect with. Your show did well because you were open and vulnerable and funny about something that happened to you. It happened to be a very sad thing, but people don't see it, like, they don't see the conduit is you dealing with it. Like, that's what people were reacting to, not that, oh, lucky old Garrett, that happened to him. I hope that happens to me one day. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, fingers crossed.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
Yeah, that is that classic Edinburgh mindset, which is why perhaps it is not a bad thing that there's a break from it this year. Everybody just to take a... just take a minute.
Take a minute, if, guys. Think about
it. Is it some sort of tragedy arms race?
Yeah. Well, again, there was that year that there was lots of shows about comedians with dead dads. And I remember people being like, oh, yeah, you wanna win, you've got to have a dead dad. And I was just like, I'm sure none of those people would take that 5-star review over their dad being there to see them do a show. Like,
yeah.
And again, but if you haven't experienced it, especially if you're a competitive comedian, empathy is not in your toolbox. Sorry, some of them are very nice.
But then it becomes that thing where people say, like, the dead dad thing. Somebody said to me, I think it was Paul Byrne said to me last year, I have seen 1,000 times more comedians in shows complaining about dead dad shows than I have seen dead dad shows. It was like, okay, people go to dead dad shows, like, fine, name 3 of them.
Yeah, that's so true. People categorizing it as like, oh, that's the thing they do, or a breakup show. And it's like, yeah, it's like, you're so right. Actually naming the shows where people talked about it so much, you could categorize it as a dead dad show, as opposed to, it's like you said, you had 45 minutes of stuff of comedy, and then you have this bit at the end which explained why there was no ending but was also truthful and honest. But I think it's just jealousy, and it's a really sad thing to be jealous of someone's pain. Like, I can only imagine that they haven't experienced pain yet, and they're going to, like, that's the thing, they're not immune, they're not going to get through life without having to grieve at some point.
But it was one of those things where it was too when something is too offensive, it's so offensive, like, you can't be offended by it. It was just funny.
Yeah.
It was just amusing. And the same thing with the person being like, right, yeah, you need another tragedy. It was like, well, that is a very interesting way of seeing the world.
Yeah.
Like going, oh, okay, yeah, I thought it was a comedian. No, now you are the miscarriage guy.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. I know. Well, I do get that as well, for people like, oh, yeah, like, you know, it happened to her, so she gets to talk about death now. And you're like, it's like, no, I'm just always going to talk about stuff that has happened to me. That's what I do, and this is something that has happened to me. But
yeah,
it's a very strange, but it only comes, I think, when you see the world as lacking, when you see that, oh, there's one piece of pie and that's it, and so the Garrett's got the miscarriage pie, well then what can I have? My life's bloody normal, like, my parents are still together, like, what do I do? And you're like, no, you just need to be funny about what's happening to you. And I've seen plenty of comedians be funny about very banal things. Like,
yeah, I mean, that's really the beauty of it. It's
yeah, it's, you don't need a tragedy to make an Edinburgh show. Like, that's, God, I mean, if you don't know comedians, and they're not all bad, but the ones that are bad are really something special. To be fair. Well, Garrett, as we just come to an end, like, obviously, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
So Sarah is pregnant, and I wish you all the best for this pregnancy. I fully understand it's gonna, you know, you will be anxious about it. It's perfectly normal.
Well, as I said, like, the first period of it was very, very stressful, but I had a word with myself, I suppose, about 8 weeks in, being like, you can't do this for 9 months. Yeah. This is not a, and also that there's a role, you know, there is a, I've got a job to do, which I find that sort of thing very, very comforting.
Yeah.
Be like, right, yeah, I've got this job, I've got a role to do. Like, when it happened the first time, I had, my mum gave me a piece of advice, which I think was that it was the most helpful thing that anybody has ever said to me. And I relayed it to a friend, and she looked at me horrified, said it was a dreadful thing to say. My mum is very old school, and there's a lot to be said for that. It's not, you know, I'm not saying that's the only valid way to be, but it was just, yeah. She was perfect with me at the time. I was in the kitchen, I was talking to her on the phone, and I just went to bits, and my mum just said, "Where is your wife?" And I said, "She's upstairs." And she was like, "Right, well, you need to park this because you've got a job to do. You're a man, you're an adult, and you're a husband, and you can do this, but you can't do it now because somebody needs you to do your job. So pull yourself together and go and be a husband." And I was like, "Right, yes. And it was phenomenally helpful. Just to be like, "Oh yeah, there's stuff to be done here. Mm. There's like, there will come a point sometime later down the road where it will be appropriate to do this." But at the time, she was right, it wasn't. And it was incredibly comforting at the time.
I think anything that can, especially in grief, that can sometimes, because grief is so inward looking, that anything that can sometimes make you just look up and look around can be really helpful, to be like, "Oh," and it's not shaming, it's not like, "Oh, get over it," at all, but it's just to be like, "Oh yes, there is someone else in pain, there is other things, that is all happening at the same time, as well as my own sadness, but they are happening presently." And also, I mean, it sounds like your mum knew what to say to you. Do you know what I mean? Like, that might not be good advice.
It was a great, bit of parenting. It was absolutely what was required at the time.
Well, Garrett, thank you so much, and thank you to Sarah as well, who's not here, but I feel like she was definitely a part of the conversation. I really appreciate you both sharing the story.
Well, thank you very much for having me and, by extension, us on. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you.
You can follow Garrett on Twitter at Millerick Comedy. You can head to his website, garrettmillerick.com, to find out where you can download his comedy albums, of his shows, and also where he's gigging. He is back gigging, hopefully soon, at the end of this year, and touring again, hopefully, if that happens. So do check that out. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Griefcast. The show was edited by Kate Holland. The music was provided by The Glue Ensemble. It was recorded in my living room, and artwork is by Jade Perkin. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, however you feel this week, you are not alone.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.